It's the old adage, you can't love someone else unless you love yourself. Add mental health challenges to the mix, and that's easier said than done. Holly Minto is the singer of UK alt-rock band Crawlers, and she lives with anxiety and depression. Holly spent her youth seeking validation and the sexual attention of others to fill a void in her life. Coming away from those years with what she calls the new normal, Holly has learned how to advocate for her own wants and needs in intimate relationships. Back then, the relationships were unhealthy coping strategies. Now, she's able to reflect and realize she's the one in control of her love life. Holly's new goal is intimacy equality, positive relationships where she's able to find mutual fulfillment and a stable environment for her mental health.
I'm Holly Minto. I'm in the band Crawlers. We're a alternative rock outfit based in Liverpool, but we're from all suburban towns around the northwest of England. Started in 2018, started in a shed in Warrington, playing kind of basement shows. And then we had an amazing viral moment that's kind of allowed us to tour since then. And now we've kind of done everything. We played our dream festivals. Now we're kind of just like building our community from honest music and using guitars to kind of like storytell. My mum is a therapist, which has definitely helped me with my journey, but also like all my family have struggled with mental health for a long time. It's the Minto family way. It wasn't until when I was 19, 20 that I kind of started noticing it. I've always suffered bad from anxiety, and I got diagnosed ADHD when I was like 16. So obviously that puts into a lot of, you know, that affects anxiety and depression. But it was in my like 20s where I completely just had a big brain shift where just the anxiety that I felt, I was getting like panic attacks all day, every day. I started experiencing like psychosis and all these things, which was absolutely terrifying. And I felt like ever since then that there's that whole thing where it's like, oh, I'll never feel normal again. But obviously like now I'm a new normal where I'm kind of a bit more aware of my mental health, having to be mindful and taking medication and looking after myself in new ways, making sure that I'm eating well, that I'm staying fit, that I'm being communicative, because it wasn't until breaking point where I was communicative now. He needs to hear how I'm feeling, just because it obviously helps me, helps me feel better. And I still get anxiety attacks, panic attacks, but they're a lot more well-managed now than that kind of era.
I love the term new normal. A lot of people think, or maybe society kind of pushes this idea of recovery and getting back to be better and getting back to where you were before all this happened. And really, I think it's about transforming into that new normal and finding a place where you feel comfortable with, because the stress comes back. If you go back to where you were, the same thing's going to happen all over again.
100%. I'm very fortunate that my mom is a therapist. And I feel like if I didn't have someone like that who helped me when I was at that breaking point, because I'd never told my mum when I was suffering with depression and anxiety before then, but now it's kind of like, she was very outspoken about non-linear journeys. It's like adjusting to what you need. And I think the new normal is like a term that I teach myself, because I have this constant nostalgic missing of who I was when I was like 20 and 19. There was like this weird awareness that I didn't have, and I hadn't experienced like psychosis. I hadn't had a big depressive episode or like suicidal thoughts any of those ages. So it's like, oh, I want to be like back then, but really I'm not going to be that again. That person's not going to be me. I'm not going to be them. And I kind of have to like forge from my experiences, learn tackling how to deal with my ADHD, anxiety, depression in this kind of new life, I guess. But I feel like currently it's the best I've been, kind of being a bit more aware of myself and my mental health.
Also, thinking back to when I was young, we all have these coping strategies, so it could be any kind of coping strategy. You talk a lot in your songs about relationships and sex and using intimacy to fill gaps in your life. I think maybe when we get a little bit older, because we just figured out more coping strategies that are healthier, can be a lot more positive. But thinking back, it was a tough go and in the teenage years, in the 20s.
It's weird because I was still experiencing, like when I was like 18, before I kind of knew I was mentally ill, you know. I was still experiencing doing those things like hunting relationships for cheap dopamine, or like being like, oh, someone finally finds me attractive, that means I'm worth something, let's go, you know. And but I didn't think of any negative connotations from that. I just thought that, oh, feminism, badass, this is great, like I'm doing this for me. Now that I'm older and I'm kind of dealing with repercussions, and that wasn't anything to do with 18-year-old me or 17-year-old me who was doing that. This is to do with society and the fact that I normalized that view in my head. And now that I'm older, I'm like, oh my God, for a while, actually worthy. But I think when you're younger, like you can receive hugging and loving from your family and your friends, and it's a lot more normalized. Whereas you get older, it's like, oh, you need a relationship, or you need this and you need that. And I'd kind of got swarmed with that because I was an unattractive kid in high school. So I was like, oh, no one loves me now. But when, as soon as I was like deemed a little bit societally attractive, I was like, this means I must be loved. It's like, no, that's not what it is. Don't be fooled.
How did you feel about those times when you're grasping at relationships and sex to sort of fill that void? At the time, are you kind of aware of it? Because you're talking about it now in reflection and it seems like you're really clear on it. But back then, did you have that inkling?
Not at all. There were so many instances where I was like in relationships that were particularly detrimental to my mental health, and I had no idea. And what's crazy is I only received the repercussions of those relationships when I was older. Like I didn't even receive them when I exited them. Like in my head, I was like, okay, I'm bored of that now, bye. But like, I was like, no, you got groomed. Like you literally got groomed by like adult men. But I didn't see it like that then. For me, it was, I was receiving validation. Like people finally want me. Now I'm older, I can kind of perceive that I'm yearning for some kind of sexual love because that's what I was taught by myself and society from an early age, you know, and through those relationships, which is so odd because when I was 17, 18 and I was going through these things, I didn't know what it was at all. And it was only when like I went and got therapy or generally self-reflected and had a look at other people's experiences, I was like, oh my God, I was really searching for some validation. Like I really hated myself and didn't even know at that point. It's obviously why I write about it so much in songs, because my 18-year-old self didn't have a voice. And now I'm 24 and I'm kind of using that voice to speak about something that has affected me and how I perceive relationships.
How does it feel to go back and, you know, write in that place and bring back those memories and express it now that you're past that in your life?
Hard. What's weird is I just want to go and give 18-year-old me a hug, because I had no realization that that's what I was doing. I had no realization that I was in one of those like dark places. I kind of was just taking it in as, oh, this is what everyone does when they're 18 and like, this is what it is. And woo, I'm finally loved. Because, you know, when you're 16 in high school and unconventionally attractive, I was obsessed with just staying on the internet because it kind of made me feel loved in some sort of way, you know, online, because I wasn't receiving any validation in person, which is where I found these people to kind of then give me validation when I was like 17, 18. But like going back and seeing me in that place, like knowing how green I was, how naive I was to think it was just what anyone should be doing is crazy. And it's like speaking to like other people and how many people have had a similar experience to that, because I guess it is perceived a lot more as normal, and especially in the industry that we're in, like the amount of older men who are predatory on women half their age just because they're like, they're mature for their age, or they're like this and I'm like that, and I'm like, what are you doing? Like obviously hits a lot harder home for me, but I'm just like, that is crazy how that's like so normalized.
Was there people in your life that were rooting for you and saying, hey, look, from our perspective, this is weird, or this seems out of place?
In all honesty, like I didn't tell my family about all those things that were going on. And, you know, now they know, but it was only my close friends. And, you know, it's crazy when your close friends who support all your silly wrongdoings are like, whoa, that made me uncomfortable. Like, it's because at that point, I didn't even know what loving and a relationship actually was, or what my body needed, what my mind needed, and what you need as your adult. I remember them being like, yeah, that was kind of in a scary situation. And what's so funny is I was so innocent and naive because of the fact that I'd not been in many relationships, the fact that I'd not felt that kind of adoration or whatever. But I was like, no, this is fine. If I don't like him, I'll just break up with him. And it's like, what the hell? The fact that I didn't even realize how serious the situation was. It's crazy to me now that I'm 24. My sister's 19 now, and imagining her in a situation like that makes me physically sick.
Being at the stage that you are now, being 24 and being in relationships that probably not always the most healthy relationships, because none of us really have those all the time. Do you remember at the time that you were experiencing not just, you know, this validation or wanting this validation, but also there was the anxiety and the depression and the ADHD that you were dealing with, but were you kind of aware of those even in a subconscious way? Or
honestly, who I was when I was like below 19 is crazy to me. Like the way I thought about things, the way that I was like perceiving things was through the most rose-tinted glasses you could ever see. And honestly, it's like something just clicked in me when I hit 20 all at once, where you kind of reflecting on all these things and realize I didn't realize how bad some situations were. I didn't realize I was suffering from anxiety. I didn't realize that like I was going into relationships for the wrong reasons. But at the time, I don't even remember ever thinking like about any of the power imbalances. What are you doing things for? What are they doing things for? Honestly, it wasn't even in my headspace until I was like 20 and I kind of started opening up, talking about the relationships I had at the time. The relationships I had then led into the relationships I had after that experience, because I was so used to these like horrible relationships where I was taking in so much. I didn't know how to have a normal relationship after it. I was like, whoa, I needed validation in certain ways because that's what I've been taught. And it just made me experience so much more emotion in relationships. And I think it's why like the relationships I had in my young 20s, I'll still write songs about them now, because I was such a fragile person and I've been taught that relationships should have been a certain way. So I got so emotionally connected in all the wrong ways. And now I'm looking at it like, oh, this girl just needed therapy. But obviously like I want to know that now. I was so young and yeah, so odd.
What does therapy look like for you right now? You mentioned that your mom's a therapist, but what are you doing to take care of yourself?
So I've kind of been in and out of therapists since I was like 21. And when I was 21, I was too mentally ill to have therapy. There's always this thing where you need to be ready for it. And I kind of didn't understand that. Like I was going into these sessions and just unraveling everything that happened with my family and with my past and then with relationships. And I was going through a breakup at the time and I just start crying and not know how to kind of process it and process, this is what happens. This is how you now think. How are you going to help yourself feeling that way? I didn't do any of the steps. I was just unraveling and trying to process everything. So then I went back to therapy when I was 22, which was dead weird because I was obviously like struggling with all these mental health things. And then the band started blowing up with songs about me being sick in the head. So it was like, I was kind of captured in this weird moment where I was going to therapist and I'm having panic attacks all day, every day and help. And she was just like, whoa, this is a lot to take in. And I remember like trying to kind of unravel that at the time. And I think now a lot of the stuff I got taught then, which was about number one, it being a nonlinear journey, a lot of which of how I process things and how I guess I see things through a new lens than I did when I was younger. The fact that I'm in this new normal. When I was like starting to have really, really bad panic attacks and experience a lot of derealization and stuff like that, my mom kind of taught me a lot of basic mindfulness, counting your breaths, 5 things you can see, 4 things you can hear, all those types of things to really try and ground myself, and meditation, learning about just sitting with yourself. And when you kind of go over your thoughts and prepare where they're coming from, and you can kind of understand if you're maliciously motivated. I think because I was so depressed, like I was quite bitey and I never understood why until I sat with myself and realized I was dealing with a lot of things and kind of hiding it. When I sat with it, I could kind of unravel that. I'm also medicated now, which I didn't want to do for a long time. And there was like this whole thing where one of my boyfriends was like, oh, God, why would you go on medication? You don't need it. And it's going to like completely change your life. And one quote that one of my housemates gave me at the time was, you won't be able to make art if you're on medication. You know, you need to suffer to have art. That is crazy. Like I couldn't make art because I was suicidal. Why would I be making art? So when I started finally taking medication and getting used to it, which my partner at the time and my housemate weaned me in and helped me when I was feeling just awful. After like 6 weeks, it really helped me stabilize where I was mentally and stop from just constantly having this negative eternal monologuing 24/7.
Yeah.
All those things were definitely what helped.
I do this bipolar support group. I have a co-facilitator that we work together on the groups, and sometimes we'll have a little chit chat afterwards, kind of check in with each other. I might say, oh, I'm feeling really depressed the last couple of days. And he always says, well, imagine what it'd be like if you weren't on your medication. That always kind of snaps me out of it.
Honestly. And it's so funny because there's a few times where I've been like, oh, I'm feeling so much better. I'm just going to stop taking. No, I'm on the medication because it's making me feel better. And that is so fine. And there are so many weird opinions on taking medication. And I don't think it's for everybody, but the horrible opinions that kind of stopped me taking it were, if you're an artist, you need to suffer. So it's just going to take away all your motivation for art. That's just not true, because when you're depressed, you're not motivated anyway. So that's not true. You get told these things like constantly in your ear, and you're like, oh, maybe I won't do it then. And it's like, dude, it has helped me so much. And I feel like it's not for everyone, but I feel like when you're in those kind of dire straits, it's such a good thing to start taking.
When you had your, you know, major mental crisis a couple years ago, and then also having like psychotic episodes, I've had those as well, and they're super scary, and they often mean things are dire. It's really time to get some serious help. But once you had all that and came out of it with a different perspective, the new normal, how did that affect your relationships?
I think I've become a lot more honest. When I was younger and kind of before that kind of break, I just wouldn't tell people how I was really feeling. But I wouldn't really tell my close friends. I'm talking about my best friends. I wouldn't really tell them how I was feeling. I wouldn't tell them if I'm feeling anxious. I'd just kind of have the anxiety and just be like, oh, this is how you're supposed to feel. You're supposed to just feel in fight and flight. What was I doing? Whereas now I tell people straight up, there is no point in suffering in silence. Like if I'm feeling wobbly, I'll just tell my friends and I'll tell my family, because at least number one, they know where I'm at if I start reacting a little bit different. But also it just means you're closer to help, because the people around you can go, oh, jokingly yesterday, and this was completely my fault, I have to say, I overdid the caffeine. I'm talking about like I had a large coffee, a large energy drink, and then another energy drink. And I was like, I'm having an anxiety attack. But I could just straight up just tell the band. I was like, I'm having an anxiety attack. I just need to sit and just like breathe. And I did. And if I was having that a few years ago, I just wouldn't have told anyone. I would have just sat then, and like people would have spoke to me, and I'd have just been like, can you stop speaking at me? Because I'd be feeling so self-contained. And it's nice to be able to like tell my mom too. I wonder if it's like, because she was like a therapist, I never wanted to worry her and make her go into that mode, but I'd always be like, yeah, I'm fine. Whereas now I'll be like, oh, I'm going to go to the gym. I'm going to do this that makes me feel a lot better. And she'll be like, oh, okay. You need any help with this, that, or I can come around, drop off chocolate or stuff like that, which is what she does. She's amazing. But communication is the one that's really saved my relationships. And I've been quite lucky that relationships I've had, whether they've been romantic or platonic in my 20s, have been open books, and I've been able to speak how I'm feeling a lot better. And I think it's something I'm still continuously working on, because you live until like what, you're 80? I'm only 24. I've got years left where, you know, I can communicate better and have those conversations. But yeah, definitely at a better point now.
Have you noticed the shift in intimacy after coming out with a new perspective? I know for me, it's like if I'm feeling awful or previous to me getting help, getting medicated, having therapy, it was really hard for me to feel intimacy with other people. It was like I was so in myself all the time.
100%. So I had this weird era where I was just like, oh, I just need anything. You know, I want to kind of feel like that rom-com vibe. Like I need something that just keeps me going a little bit rather than doing something because I actually liked a person. Whereas recently I've been kind of stepped back. Relationships can do different things for you as a human being. You can have one that's fulfilling what you want to do the rest of your life. You can have one that's fulfilling. So actually, it's a pretty open book. And now I'm quite open with that communicative, what I want, and able to feel again. And that idea of a crush and feeling like you're 14 again, you know, at 24 is so great, because when I was depressed, it was numb as hell. And it's like, didn't really get to kind of explore those feelings. And I also feel like I go in relationships, I had this kind of brain thing where it's like, oh, okay, they probably want to have sex with you now, because that's what you're here for. Like if they're going to want to kiss you and give you those hugs, like you've got to pay them back with something, which is such a horrific way to feel. But it's definitely this societal impact, and my prior relationships pop that in my head where it's like, oh, they've given you their time, so they'll probably want sex. Whereas now I don't have that anymore. And it's equal terms. It's a lot more communicative, and it's a lot more like, oh, I don't want today. Okay, cool. shall we go so much telly? Yeah, let's do that. A lot of times I'd be in healthy relationships, but that would still be what my brain said. Like, I'd be like, oh, they've come over and they'll probably want to have sex. It's like, why was that a monologue in my head? Whereas now it's like, oh, now let's have TV time or like cook or go out for a meal. And I don't feel like I have to give them something at the end of it, because time is what you want together for a fulfilling relationship, whether that's romantic, platonic, dating, or, you know.
Well, it probably helps also that there's more of a equality in who you're with. It's bringing that playing field to a place where you feel like you're with someone that is on the same wavelength, I guess, as you are.
I feel like some people are so self-aware at a young age, and I just was not. Like, it took me until being 20, but there was must have been a time where I just didn't like who I was, so I just wanted to make sure that I liked the relationship and whatever kind of turnabouts and uneven dynamics that had.
When you think about your relationships now, and especially your intimate relationships, romantic relationships, how would you describe them? Like, I'm in this relationship and this is what it's like.
Me first now. I'd always think about the other person first. And I think there's this whole cliche and societal thing where it's like, you are my everything and I will give you my whole body, my whole future. I will give you everything. Take it. And it's like, that is not healthy. I kept doing that in all my relationships. And I also got confused when I was entering relationships and I didn't want to give you everything. There's that whole joke that RuPaul says all the time, which is, how in hell can you love somebody if you can't love yourself? Can I get an amen? It's true. I actually like myself now and I like who I am out of the relationship. So when you're building a relationship, you're building something, but you still have your own quest and your own pathway and your whole everything. Like, dude, I'm living this life. We only get one, or who knows, but we don't know what we get. So with what we've got now, if I'm treating myself like I'm a side character or a supporting role, that's not fun. Relationships can be fulfilled in so many ways, but you can only get true fulfillment from yourself. You're going to be the only person who wakes up with yourself every day. And relationships are just amazing things too, where you want that other person to love themselves more than they love you, so then you can love each other with all the love in the world, I guess. That's definitely how I see it now, which is very different to how I saw it when I was 18.
That was my conversation with Holly Minto of Crawlers, crawlersofficial.com. For more episodes of Screen Therapy, go to screentherapyhq.com or wherever you listen to podcasts. Big news, the Screen Therapy book is available now. Screen Therapy, A Punk Journey Through Mental Health, tells my story and the stories of others who use punk as a catalyst for mental health. Like this podcast, it links the community-minded punk scene with the mental wellness of the punks who belong to it. To order the book, go to screentherapyhq.com. For merch, check out the newly opened store at screentherapyhq.com/store. And for even more designs, check out Screen Therapy on TeePublic. Okay, enough promoting. It's time for some thanking. Thank you for listening to Screen Therapy. Doing this podcast and talking to folks about punk rock and mental health has been a crucial part of my own mental stability, and it means so much to me that you're out there listening. Screen Therapy is created in the Cathet region of coastal British Columbia, Canada, on the traditional territory of the Klahaman Nation. Contact me at screentherapyhq.com or email me at screentherapypodcast@gmail.com. I'd love to hear from you. Let's talk about punk rock and mental health. Until next time, take care and be well. What do you do when you
your mind's gone crazy and no one can find you. What do you do when your world comes down in a perfect disaster? What do you do when you're feeling very critical, like starting a war? What do you do when your left eyes away, she can't be bothered with you anymore? You said fine to the cellar door. You said fine to the cellar door. You said fine to the cellar door. Count to three and rise from the concrete floor. You said fine to the cellar door. You said fine to the cellar door. You said fine to the cellar door. Count to three and rise from the concrete floor. What do you do when you look in the mirror at a man who disgusts you? What do you do? Do you pretend you're getting better or put it back together now? What do you do when you're hiding away but you're screaming for attention? What do you do when you've had enough and you don't want to do that anymore? You said fire to the cellar door. You said fire to the cellar door. You said fire to the cellar door. Count to three and rise from the concrete floor. You said fire to the cellar door. You said fire to the cellar door. You said fire to the cellar door. Count to three and rise from the concrete floor.
Episode of Get Lit. Today on the show we have author Sarah Henstra. You're listening to Get Lit. It's Jamie on the mic as always, and we are talking to Sarah Henstra from her office at the fine establishment known as TMU in Toronto. We're going to talk about her novel, The Lost Tarot. Sarah, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much, Jamie. Thanks for having me.
No, super happy to have you. It's a fascinating book, and there's lots that we can get into. I don't know if this half hour is going to be enough, but let me start with the question I always ask a first-time guest, and that is, what led you down this questionable road to being a writer?
Oh, yeah, that is a good question. I always read novels, and, you know, did I have active fantasy?